Ya lo hace. Pierna derecha, directo al arco. ¡Golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Tuesday, December 3rd, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Rollins, as always. But before we start the show, let's thank our three new patrons that took advantage of our special offer, Blair, John, and Taggart. Thank you very much for Taggart. Thank you very much for your trust and your confidence with taking the advantage of our special offer for three more days. Today, all the way to Friday, you can get the $10 tier, the documentary tier of the Sports Podcast Network for $5. Yes, with the $5 pledge, you get the $10 tier included only until Friday here on our Patreon page, patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. But on another note, how you doing, Dwayne?
I'm doing well. Beautiful sunny day after a couple miserable days here in Toronto. So it's still cold, but you know, that's December. But yeah, it's all good. December is one of the weirdest months for this show in a lot of ways. We are so MLS focused for so long, and we get this one month each year where it's kind of like it takes a little bit of a backdoor, but we're ready to go through it and get into the Christmas season. Excited that we're going to, I think, be more doing more shows this December than we ever have before. So that's going to be fun, and I'm excited today. Also, Jonathan Tannenwald and myself will be debuting the Women's Soccer Review, which is the first time we've had a dedicated women's show on the network, and it's something that I've wanted to have for a while, Kevin.
Yeah, way over, long overdue. And Jonathan and Dwayne will be able to use their networks of contacts across the NWSL and the world of women's soccer as a whole, from the journalistic side and also, I imagine, the player side eventually, too, probably. But you get to hear more later today on the Sports Podcast Network feed. It'll be available on the Soccer Today feed. Also, for now, the Women's Soccer Review debuting later today on sportspodcastingnetwork.com. Also, later today, the re-entry draft, we'll touch it a bit. There's some MLS news. We'll talk about the MLS schedule, well, at least the conference's alignment that was confirmed yesterday by Major League Soccer. We teased it at the end of the show yesterday. But also yesterday, Dwayne, was the Ballon d'Or. No controversies this year. Woohoo! At least the host didn't insult one of the recipient live on stage. So that's always a good way to start.
There was no references to
twerking.
Dance trend. Yeah. Yeah. So that's good, because the woman who won it would not have taken that.
Oh my gosh.
For sure.
If she would have been live, she would have. Good on Megan Rapinoe.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, we shouldn't laugh, but it's laughable.
It's laughable, exactly, because that dude, I don't even remember his name, and that's fine. I guess I'm not in the DJ world. But quickly, Megan Rapinoe won the Women's Ballon d'Or. Lionel Messi won his sixth Ballon d'Or, which got a lot of the attention in front of Virgil van Dijk and Cristiano Ronaldo. Of course, Lionel Messi is sixth Ballon d'Or. He is now the person with the most amount of Ballon d'Or in the history of football.
Yeah, and look, we had this conversation earlier this year where we thought that the voters were starting to get a little bit cute, and that came from fatigue, basically, from Ronaldo Messi. And the reality is, when you look at the men's side of the game, those two are so head and shoulders above the rest. I mean, I think back, here's, get your bingo cards out. I think back to the 80s, 90s in hockey, and it's like, as much as you might have been fatigued by Gretzky and Lemieux winning everything, they were the best two players by miles. So they had to, right? And it's the same thing now. And, you know, he was deserved. You look at the amount of goals he scored in the calendar year, and how could you not award it to him, particularly in a year where there is not a major tournament? You know, when Modric won, it was because of the play in the World Cup. And when World Cup years happen, that does bump things a little bit higher in people's estimation for those few weeks, right? And the rest of the year doesn't matter as much. And that was the issue with Modric, is when you looked at his overall season in 2018, it wasn't as strong as a Messi or a Ronaldo, but he had a hell of a run at the World Cup and took, you know, his small nation almost to the ultimate prize. Came up short, obviously, in the final, but when you're, you know, in Croatia and you're in the World Cup final, that's a significant accomplishment. And that's always going to be the case. But it's you know, what are you going to say about Messi? You know, he's brilliant. We are very lucky to have seen him. You know, you can have GOAT conversations about him, and it's reasonable. You know, I tend to lean Maradona.
Madonna. Yeah, I didn't even know she played football. But I guess she was a pioneer in her own world.
Yes. Madge was, Maradona. I tend to lean that way, but Maradona obviously had his own issues, and it's a different year. And, you know, you're comparing years, it's a bit weird. So, but Messi, as I've always said, is the most, he's the purest goal scorer I've ever seen. His ability to finish is just off the charts. Now, Ronaldo is a completely different player, if we can have a GOAT conversation right now, in the sense that he's a more all-around player in a lot of ways, and he's a pure athlete. But that's almost makes you, I think Messi a little bit, think higher of Messi even more. So yeah, I don't think anyone should have any issue with you know, Messi winning yesterday. He is the best player of 2019 in my mind, and you know, he's still got a few years left in him for sure.
I've been spending the last 20 seconds thinking of how I can do puns with Madonna team song in my sentences coming forward. So, no, I agree with you. But speaking of Maradona and Messi, you mentioned big tournaments, right? When there's a big tournament, Argentina usually don't win them. So it doesn't help Messi. But he still won 6 Ballon d'Or overall. And, of course, on later today on the first edition of the Women's Soccer Review, I imagine Dwayne and Jonathan will talk about Megan Rapinoe in context, winning a Ballon d'Or, the first time a U.S. national team woman got a Ballon d'Or, and that is quite an accomplishment by Megan Rapinoe. Of course, the Women's World Cup this year, a big tournament on the women's game, did for sure had a big weight on the value of the voting. And Megan Rapinoe, I guess the judges saw the ray of light. All right, I did my Madonna pun. I can move on now.
There you go. Yeah, Jonathan and I, that will be our main topic today after we sort of introduce the show. But, you know, the TLDR for this show is that the debate that surrounds this is whether Rapinoe is the most famous women's soccer player or whether she truly is the best women's soccer player. If you read my Twitter feed, you know that I think that it's more on the former than the latter. That doesn't mean, but there is a debate to be had here because she certainly did have a major impact on that tournament. She wasn't the best player in the tournament in terms of moment to moment, but she had great moments in the tournament that are very memorable. And I don't know, I honestly don't, and I'm not sure where Jonathan's going to come down on this, whether that should all supersede the entirety of the rest of the season, those few moments that we all remember, whether that in the women's game should matter more than more consistency. Because if you're just looking at consistency, I mean, Sam Kerr perhaps might deserve it for her overall club play, for instance, just a name off the top of my head. We'll get a lot more into the details, I said, on the show, as I say, Kevin, but it is something that has sort of been around in the women's voting for this award and for Player of the Year for years. You know, when Marta was winning, you know, I'm sure she's going to get votes 5 or 6 years after she retires, too, and that speaks to the lack of knowledge that a lot of the voters have, and that's a major problem. Regardless of whether you think Rapinoe should have won this year.
And that's one of the reasons why you want to start this show, that show as well, is that people are aware of more than just the flashy names that make headlines in the world of sports. You also want to know the actual players that performing at the highest level. Sometimes they don't necessarily equivalent with the big stars. But also, outside of Lionel Messi and Megan Rapinoe, you had, it's right in front of me, Matthias De Ligt winning the U21 trophy, the Copa trophy, which was won last year by Kylian Mbappe. And you know the story they told with Didier Drogba was kind of funny. In the 2004, I believe, Champions League final between Chelsea and Bayern Munich, before the game, a little kid asked Didier Drogba, you know, after the game, you promised me you're going to take a picture together. It's like, yeah, no problem. But because that game did not go well for the Blues, he didn't do that picture. So 20-some years later, not even 15 years later, that boy was actually Kylian Mbappe. So they actually took a selfie on the stage, Didier Drogba and Kylian Mbappe, just before Kylian Mbappe gave the trophy to the new best U21 player in the world, Matthias De Ligt of Juventus.
Yeah, and look, that's, to me, in a lot of ways, the youth award is more interesting than the overall award, especially in the men's side, because the men's side has been a broken record, as we just said, for a decade now. So, you know, which one of them gets it is not as interesting to me as what kind of players we might look to in the forward. There's a mixed record when you look at those players that have won that award or won any youth award. Like, it's still a little bit early in the career to project all the way forward, but certainly if you're, you know, winning these things, you're probably going to be okay. Mbappe, it's certainly going to be okay. Kevin, really speaking quickly of that, this is a much more minor award, but one I think our Canadian listeners will be interested to know that the Who Scored Player of the Left Back of the Month, this is worldwide, not age-restricted.
Alphonso Davies.
Best left back in the world last month, statistically speaking, according to WhoScored.com.
So, yeah, he's not a left back. Something. But he's not a left back, Dwayne. Forget about this. He's not a left back.
I think he might be.
That's the point.
At Bayern Munich, he's a left back.
And that's the whole point. Sometimes things don't happen the way you think it happens. Doesn't mean it's not good. I guess that's why Davies is a freaking left back. All right, so the other trophy we haven't mentioned is the best goalkeeper in the world, the Yashin Trophy. No, not the Alexei Yashin Trophy. A different Yashin, for sure. But the Yashin Trophy, given to the best goalkeeper in the world. It's the first time for this trophy this year, and it's been given to the goalkeeper of Liverpool, Alisson, getting the Yashin Trophy for the very first time. And that's a trophy that we have to say is long overdue, because goalkeepers will never win any other trophies that are not dedicated to goalkeepers. I'm talking about individual awards here. Like, never will you get, I don't know, let's say a big name goalie right now. Like, I don't know, you get a goalkeeper of Casillas, or no, it's not good anymore, I know, but it's the first thing that popped in my mind. They'll never win they'll never win player of the world of the year. It will always be a player that is not a goalkeeper, but at least they got their own trophies now.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're going to have individual awards, you have to recognize certain aspects of it, and certain positions are going to be prejudiced against over others. So this is a possibility to rectify this. Goalkeeping is such a unique role on any field. You're almost playing a different sport, really. I mean, it's much more cognitive, although
think
nowadays you do have
to... Oh, sorry, Dwayne. I was going to say, think about this. You have a different set of rules that apply to you than the 20 other players on the field. There's only one other player that has the same rule set as you have. Everyone else plays a different game than you are, literally, because they cannot do the same thing as you can. And it's not just catching the ball. It's all the little nuances. But yeah, you're right. It's almost two different sports.
Which is, you know, I think why they're not going to distinguish defenders and midfielders out of that. That said, you know, there are sort of, it's going to be very difficult for a defender to consistently be named the best player. Van Dijk did, obviously. We know that's an exception, but that really was notable because it was such an exception. It's just a difficult situation to do there. And then if you really went, we just talked about left backs a minute ago. Yeah, they're never going to get considered for anything, even now that they're very important in terms of how most teams play. But you still, you know, you see that with in Major League Soccer when they have their best 11 each year. It's like, where are the fullbacks, guys? This team would get killed. But anyway,
this is a subject for a potential documentary, Dwayne, the evolution of the fullbacks and how, tactically speaking, over the last decade, they've been one of the positions that have changed the most when you're looking about responsibilities given to them, especially offensively. Back in the day, it wasn't necessarily as involved as today is. So no, that's a fascinating thing too, the evolution of the tactics of a fullback. But no, and I think that's about what I have from the Ballon d'Or ceremony. Pretty by the numbers ceremony when you look at it. Congratulations to Megan Rapinoe, Lionel Messi, also Virgil van Dijk for having a defender in the top three of best players in the world. That's not too shabby, because, well, defenders are underappreciated, I think, in the world of sports. And we have to give credit where credit is due. But again, congratulations to the four recipient of trophies from yesterday's ceremony.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Alisson wins there for Liverpool to represent. Klopp was named the manager of the year earlier this year. It's a reflection of Van Dijk in the final three, a reflection of most observers' belief that Liverpool was the best team of 2019. As a Manchester City fan, I have a little bit of issue with that. They beat them in three out of four competitions, but nonetheless, they won the one that is perceived as the biggest of all. So you've got to give them credit for what they've done and what they continue to do with the longest undefeated streak in many years in the Premier League happening right now. And Liverpool does not seem stoppable. We'll see how they do at the World Club Cup and how that affects. I mean, they're obviously the favorite in that competition, but if anyone even remembers when it starts, because that's really jumping. But
well, it's certainly. I was thinking, when is it again? Oh, yeah, it's coming up for sure. It's in December. But where is it again?
Yeah.
Where is it? I don't know. I don't even remember. I haven't paid attention to it yet. And I guess that's all you need to know about the importance of the FIFA Club World Cup. It's crazy because all the feeder tournaments are super popular. But the big tournament itself, which I guess is not that big.
It seems like an afterthought is why. But why it's, I think, going to get a little more attention this year is twofold. One, Liverpool has some of the most rabid and largest fan bases in the world. They're absolutely crazy about that team. No one can deny that passion, and so they might be paying a little bit more attention, but more to the fact that they so desperately want to win the league, and this competition is being pushed right into the middle of their season, that it is going to be difficult to, it's going to be interesting to see how they play it out. They have a cup draw in there too, which they've asked to play two games in 48 hours or something like that, one at the Club World Cup and one in the Cup. And it's, I think you're probably going to see the Liverpool U14 playing that Cup competition.
How is it doing at Millwall? I mean, Millwood? Yeah, Millwood is a training
facility. Millwall's a team, yeah.
I know. I was close, okay? Just a couple letters. Leave me alone. Melwood, whatever the name is, they're going to play in a cup game. No, it's interesting. And but I guess that wraps up our coverage of the Ballon d'Or. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back with MLS news. There were some trades yesterday, free agent signings, and also the re-entry draft stage 2 later today. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/ Sports Podcasting Network. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today once again until Friday, 11 a.m. Just before the start of the show, go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. Every $5 members, that's our special offer this week. Started last week and it's this week as well. Every $5 members as of Friday, 11 a.m. gets access to the $10 tier for 6 months. That's a big offer, so big that I almost cough. So yeah, it's a big offer and we hope you join us at patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. Dwayne, before we go to the schedule, I think we were right. We said Luis Robles, we can see him signing with Miami. Well, that's done.
Yeah, well, it made sense. They needed a keeper. This was quite obviously the best keeper with a lot of MLS experience out there. And it's a good signing for them. As I said the other day, as much as we've made fun of Miami over the past, They've made their announcement.
5 years?
That they were in. It was 2013.
Jesus, 2013. 6 years.
Yeah, so it's been a while. But that announcement was an intention that they would pursue the franchise. And yeah, so it took a long time to get to this point. But I do actually like the build that they're doing there. And when you consider that they are going to be able to likely sign some very high-end DPs. I mean, David Silva has been linked to them, and that makes a lot of sense. A Spanish international, played at the top levels, that has a recognition across the league in that market, I think makes a lot of sense. That rumor connects the dots to me, so we'll see. And he's announced that this is his last year at City. So yeah, I do think that Miami is going to debut as the better of the two expansion franchises this year. Nashville a little closer to the Minnesota model, Miami a little closer to the Atlanta model, although I'm not sure the league's going to allow quite another one of those to jump in at the level that they did again.
Well, the difference is you don't come in with a 70,000 stadium also. That's leverage. Like, we're talking about an expansion team coming into the league with leverage. because there's money behind them. It's not just the owner. It's also the 40,000 season ticket holders and the 70,000 potential ticket sales for every game that has a lot of leverage behind it. Nashville, or even Miami for that matter, do not have that. Not even close.
Here's the other thing too, and this is, you know, CBA is going to be like, put that on your bingo card too. Us talking about the CBA as it relates to things that are happening right now over the next month or so. But until we know what's going on there, everything's impacted. Everything has to have a caveat. But when you're talking about the expansion team launches, how they handle TAM and GAM is really going to matter to how successful these teams can launch. Because one thing that doesn't, I mean, most people that know, but it doesn't get talked about a lot because it's just better to say, oh, look at these great new teams that came in and how amazing that they built this team out of scratch and aren't they special, aren't they smart? But the reality is that they were, and I'm not trying to be bitter when I say this, the reality is that LAFC and Atlanta, along with the teams of Cincinnati and Minnesota that didn't do as well, had all of these inherited advantages when it comes to the TAM and GAM. They had extra money to spend, and the difference between again, the teams that did not succeed in the launch and the teams that did succeed in the launch is the teams that did succeed in the launch spent that money well, spent that money better. We can point to how they spent the DP money, and that certainly mattered, especially in Atlanta's case. I mean, Almiron, you know, you bought that player for what you bought him for, and that was why they won MLS Cup in a lot of ways, I think. You took him off the team. We saw them this year as they were vulnerable, and they did not win MLS Cup, although they were good. It every bit as much mattered the TAM and GAM, though. And as much as, you know, Cincinnati or Minnesota might want to cry poor and say that's why they didn't win, it was also that they didn't handle that TAM GAM as well, particularly, yeah, as we've said many times before, Kevin,
Cincinnati.
In Cincinnati's case.
Just to remind people, $400,000 of allocation for Nick Haglund.
For a backup defender, yeah. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely insane. Like, I mean, within a world context, that's like spending $10 million for him. It's within the context of MLS, it kind of is in terms of the money they have to spend.
Because the value,
just, it made no sense.
The value of $400,000 is more than that, because you can bring a big name player and bring it down to, so it's like a million and some. That's how we evaluate it, estimated, I guess.
Yeah. So, but, you know, to bring it back to the point of Nashville and Miami, if they do get rid of Cam and Gam and Tam, then that's going to make a difference depending on how they do that. I mean, do they get rid of Gamatam, but then add the extra to the cap so that these teams then have the ability to have a bigger salary cap? That's going to be harder for the league to sell to the general fan. The general fan doesn't get Tam and Gam because they don't spend as much time as you and I do and a lot of our listeners do.
Who does?
Thinking about MLS rules. They just go, what the hell is that?
We have a problem because we do that very often. There's not a day that goes by that Cam and Tam is not part of at least one thought. So I guess,
yeah,
I have a problem.
Whereas a general fan, they're not going to get that, but they are going to get that. Wait, why does Miami have $1 million more on their cap than my team? And it's going to be a little harder to hide, right?
Wow. When you put it that way, it's like, it's true.
Yeah, but that's kind of the difference that they've had. And it is something that we're going to have to watch is how they handle Gam Tam. And it's, to me, that's as much as free agency is going to be as much of the battleground in this thing. The players do not like those mechanisms. They are on record as saying they want to get rid of them. They want to simplify how T players come in. And the teams are still trading it. So that tells you where the owner's position is.
Speaking of still trading it, let's not go far. Let's go back to yesterday. We've talked about Luis Robles, free agent signing with Inter Miami. By the way, Luis Robles didn't ask the New York Red Bulls, as it was said on the Counterattack show on SiriusXM yesterday. He demanded to the Red Bulls, at least ask them, can you just let me go? Like, don't decline my option. Let me choose where I want to go. And it made sense when he signed with Inter Miami. But speaking of Nashville, they traded yesterday. This is off MLSsoccer.com. Nashville acquired forward Dominic Badgey from FC Dallas in exchange of $325,000 of allocation. That's $175,000 of TAM and $125,000 of GAM, plus a further $75,000 of GAM should incentives be met. How to make it even simpler when you have options on the monopoly money that had been changing hands, but giving Gary Smith another attacker to choose from, as they now have 21 players, so you have a bit more definite players and starters for Nashville, Dominic Badgey may be the striker for Nashville.
Yeah, when I look at Nashville's build, I don't see a team that is anywhere close to as weak as Cincinnati was, or as ineffectively built.
Or Minnesota in 2017, yeah.
Yeah, I see a team that's not really necessarily going to scare anyone, though. But I think when you're looking at the market of Nashville, that might be the way you need to build. You need to get a solid base, and they've sort of building up the spine with McCarty and players like that, a little older, but a little veteran presence there. And you just look at how they built forward. And I think that, well, what Drake Hills said to us last week was, I think, pretty accurate, that they just want to be, they don't want to stand out. And I thought that was a good way to put it, that they don't want, like, they know they're not going to jump in and be Atlanta or LAFC. They're not going to stand out that way. So they don't want to stand out the other way either. So this is a team, I think, that will plug along, get 35 points, you know, have a few big days that their fans enjoy, aren't really going to be close to a playoff, aren't going to really be a contender, might take a couple years to get there, but will have a slow build. You know, I just compared them to Minnesota, but Minnesota kind of had a false start in that. Like, we called it soft launch, hard launch with Minnesota. It was more like no launch, soft launch, hard launch.
It was like an extremely soft launch. And then, boom, one of the best stadiums in the league, which maybe Nashville will be similar too. Well, let's be honest. But they're going to play in a big stadium, though, to begin with. Like, they're going to play where the Tennessee Titans play. So I don't think they'll be quite the same buy-in by the fans. Maybe I'm wrong that Atlanta, but they could have a potential, a lot of people, a lot of fan base, but I doubt that's the plan, to open up the big stadium for every single game.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think it's going to be like Atlanta. Then again, we didn't think Atlanta was going to be like Atlanta either.
That's true. Far away from the Silverbacks they were.
Yeah, but the difference there is that they came in at the same time as that stadium was opening, and there was just, and it was coming off, was it not coming off the Super Bowl appearance by the Falcons as well?
That they lost, or did it come out the year after? I don't know, but I know that they were winning 28-3, and then they lost to the Patriots. So.
Yeah, and I'm wondering whether there just was more of excitement in the market there. It was shocking that happened, and I mean, look, it's not the first time even in MLS history that a team that had absolutely no interest at the lower level suddenly came in and was, whoa, where'd these players come from? I'm standing in a city that did the same thing.
The Lynx could barely get 1,000 people to every game for decades. And then, Toronto FC, where the heck they come out of from? That's left field.
There's just certain cities that, and Atlanta's the same way as Toronto in the sense that every other team they have is in a major league. So it's, you know, it's hard to get people excited about lower levels in cities that have a lot of top level professional teams, even when it comes to MLS. But yeah, Nashville, look, I don't know what to think there. The Predators are the example to me. Obviously they do well on the football side, but that's never was going to be a question. The Predators, their ability to sell it, and anyone who's ever been down there, and I know several people that have made trips, because Nashville's a fun town to party in, and if you put a hockey game into it, whether it's your team or not, there's a lot of Canadians that will go down for a weekend and, you know, enjoy some music and watch a game, and they all say the same thing when they come back, that the experience in that rink is incredible. It's loud constantly, and the fans are really engaged, and you know, maybe 10 years ago, they might have been engaged in a kind of, like, random way, but now they're engaged and informed, because they've been there for 10 years. And I think it's possible that it could happen on the soccer side as well, but I don't know until I see it.
No, that's fair. That's fair. Speaking of Nashville and Miami, yesterday, Dwayne, Major League Soccer confirmed what Stephen Goff of the Washington Post mentioned earlier in the day, pretty much when the show started yesterday around 11 a.m. Stephen Goff tweeted about it, and here is the new conferences for 2020, 13 clubs in each conference says, let's go with the Eastern Conference. That's where Miami will be. That makes a lot of sense. So Atlanta, Chicago, Columbus, D.C., Cincinnati, Miami, Montreal, New England, New York, New Jersey, New York, Orlando, Philly, and Toronto. This is the Eastern Conference. And the Western Conference for 2020, Dwayne, Colorado, Dallas, Houston, L.A., Carson, Minnesota, Nashville, Portland, Real Salt Lake, San Jose, Seattle, Kansas City, and the Vancouver Whitecaps. Does this represent the best placement for these 13 clubs on each side?
The argument is whether they should have moved Chicago to the West and let Nashville be in the East, because the thinking is that when St. Louis comes in and when Sacramento comes in, well, obviously Sacramento.
And Austin?
But same,
also
and Austin, that you're going to have to shift them back. And I think the reason they kept Chicago where they were is twofold. I think that they're a little more, they're, the excitement around a new team in Nashville is going to counter any regional stuff here. They're still going to open up with Atlanta. So that's their closest team. That's the team that they want to have the rivalry against. So they're still going to get that game with them off the start, but then, you know, they don't really care. You're just having shirts come in to play your team after that point, because you don't know the league that well, most fans, and you're just excited to be there.
Yeah.
Whereas Chicago, if you were to move them away from their traditional rivals, and they really are traditional rivals in the East now for Chicago, because they've been not conference for so long, in a year where they're trying to relaunch, then that's going to be a handicap that's very difficult for them, especially if you're going back forth.
Oh,
it's tough though. Go ahead.
I was going to say also, you're going to have to bring him back in 2 years to the Eastern Conference, because Chicago is going to have to be here. Something's got to give, because Sacramento, they're going to be in the Western Conference. There's no way that you put Sacramento in the Eastern Conference. It's clearly West. Austin.
Yeah, when you get to, I was going to say, the other thing is you might not have East-West divides in 4 years, and I know that's going to make people crazy, but I...
Oh, yeah, four divisions?
They're going probably to four at some point. Or three.
The metropolitan area with Montreal, Toronto, New York, Philly, and New England sounds pretty much possible to me. 4 times 6, it's 24. Actually, you need... 4 times 7, that's 28. Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah. There's always going to be a team when you're trying to divide geographically. There's always going to be a team that doesn't quite fit. And they're usually the teams in the middle. So,
St. Louis.
You know, the NHL.
I was going to say, just like St. Louis.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, you look in hockey again, one that I always draw to because of my youth. The Leafs were in the Western Conference for a while. Think about that for a second. Doesn't make any damn sense.
It's true.
I mean, when they first famously, they don't have a lot of famous moments, but when they had their run to the semifinals, they were in the Western Conference finals. They played the Vancouver Canucks in the Western Conference finals 1 year. It blows the mind.
Well, it's funny. You say your youth. For my youth, when I think about the Maple Leafs, they were in the Western Conference. It was not a rival of the Canadiens. I could barely play them every year. That's what I think about the Leafs. But no, it just to illustrate your point.
Yeah, I mean, not to talk hockey for a second, but that's why the Leafs-Habs is not as big a rivalry as Habs-Bruins, because they were, first off, the Leafs weren't good enough from 1967 through to now. Well, they had a couple stretches. I mean, they're not in the early 2000s, they were okay. And
in the 80s,
the early 90s, they were okay, but they were never, when they were okay in those two streaks, they weren't playing the Habs. So that's why. So that, you know, rivalries matter to MLS too, to make it relevant back to our point. So that is going to be a factor in how they divide these, but I could see them quite easily dividing. Maybe even, you don't have to go to four. You could go to three with East, Central, West. But then you're still going to have, like, is Nashville Central or is Nashville East? Because they're going to want to play Atlanta, and Atlanta is definitely East. So, whatever. I mean, you could just have one table, but then you're playing 64 games. So, that becomes a little bit much.
So, our season actually lasts 4 years? So, in 4 years, we'll have a champion. But no, it's not going to be that case. But yeah, in the future, we'll probably 4 divisions of 7. When there's 28 team and when there's 29, I don't know, it's going to be going. It's going to go from 27 to 29 because there's going to be two in 2022 and in 2021, one, which is Austin, and then 2022, Sacramento and St. Louis. So you're going to have 29 teams. So 4 divisions of 7, 3 divisions of 7, 1 division of 8, probably. And there's going to be weird things, but the calendar in 2020, Dwayne, will be 2 games versus every team in your conference and 10 games versus 10 of 13 teams from the other conference. So there's 3 teams that you're not going to face in the regular season in the league, and that could bias some the table to some point. Example, if one of the three teams you don't face, an example, if you're a team in the Eastern Conference and you have the benefit of not facing LAFC, not facing another big club, an example, Seattle, the defending champions, or another big club, and maybe the Galaxy. Well, you're an advantage because it's points that you're not missing because you didn't lose those games. And it'll make for sure a lot of debates when the full schedule is announced.
Yeah, there'll be strength of schedule blogs put out there for sure. This isn't this is the first time that they haven't had every team play every other team at least once. But it's certainly not the first time they've had unbalanced schedules. That was pretty common
every year.
Yeah, and for instance, you used to play three teams. You'd have rival teams that you'd play three times in your conference, and the rest of your conference you'd only play twice, which to me was more problematic than this, because at least in that particular case, you weren't having, like, if you had a bottom dweller that you were playing three times as a contending team versus the contending team that was playing another contending team three times, that was a significant advantage when you were in this competing for the same playoff positions.
I think of Toronto versus Montreal in 2012, 13, 14, 15, all the way to when they changed it in 16 or 17, anyways. But yeah, it's Montreal were playing three times Toronto. Toronto was way better than Montreal, usually. And Montreal couldn't beat Toronto at home, so some years you would play twice in the regular season at BMO Field, and that was 6 points gone already, right there.
Yeah, and to flip it the other way, too, is that the Crew had a great advantage in the late part of the last decade, early part of this one, when they were playing the terrible football club three times every year for the Trillium Cup, right?
So exactly. No, but it will create a debate, and we'll keep an eye on that debate, as we always do. But for now, we'll bid you adieu, and we'll see you tomorrow for another edition of Soccer Today. You can follow us on social media at 24th Minute for Dwayne, at myself, at Kev Laramie, and you can find this show at Soccer Today SPN, as you know, live Monday to Friday, 11 a.m. on our Twitter feed and podcast and video. Replay available on YouTube, Facebook, and everywhere you get your podcasts. Look later today for the debut of the Women's Soccer Review, hosted by Dwayne Rollins and Jonathan Channenwald. It will debut later today, where they will talk about Megan Rapinoe winning the Ballon d'Or and more of the women's soccer game on this Women's Soccer exclusive show, available on the Sports Podcasting Network later today. Also, until Friday, our special offer on our Patreon page: get the $5 tier and you get the 6 month free of the $10 tier. Patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. Three tiers: $2 for the Two Solid Two Soccer Podcasts, $5 for three bonus premium podcasts a week, Soccer Today Presents, Five Rings Extra, where Dwayne and I look at the world of 1976, the Montreal Olympics. Part 2 is coming later this week, and more at our Patreon page, patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. But as always, until tomorrow, we wish you a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcasts.